You are listening to the Paper Player Podcast. This is episode 11. I'm your host, Tony, and I'm joined with my co-hosts, Jeff and JB. Josh is not here today, but he told me that he couldn't come to the podcast because he's sorting bulk. What do you guys think of that?
Yeah, I don't believe that too much, but if he finds anything good, he definitely has got to let us know.
Do I feel like he'd be like fidgeting the whole time?
He'd get distracted really easily.
Yeah, it makes sense. JB, you play any Modern this weekend?
No, I played Legacy instead.
Would you rock in Legacy?
I was going to play Lands. I should have played Lands because there were two other players that were playing Lands out of the eight. So it would have been pretty great to force everyone to suffer through that. But I played Delver instead.
So you played your Modern deck in Legacy?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'm kind of on it right now and I like it a lot. So I don't mind playing it more and more.
Didn't you used to hate Brainstorm and now you're on the Brainstorm camp?
I never hated it. My pet deck has always been lands, so whenever I want to play for fun, I usually just pull out lands because Tabernacle is the best card in Magic's history.
Pretty dope. Jeff, you play any Magic this weekend?
Yeah, I played Modern. I took Red Blue Arclight Phoenix with Demi Lich. I went, 2-2 drop because I didn't want to play the third round because I was tilted. Round one actually surprisingly was pretty crazy. It was a really good match. I played against blue-black Thopter combo, and we went to game three. We went to time, came to turn five. I got him down to three. I passed. It ended, and he was like, well, I had two Whirr of Inventions in hand, and I showed him that I was holding on to two Abrades, and he was like, you know what? I concede. He was like, he would have won that if we would have continued, so I did get the win for round one. Round two, I played against this weird, like, black, white, green deck that ended up going undefeated. It split in the finals, but he was playing like Grief and he was reanimating that like seven drop demon that when it comes into play makes you like lose three, discard, and sack a creature. I didn't even know it was a card and he played it and I was like, what just happened? So game three against him, I messed up. I brought in Flusterstorm. He went turn two Chalice. I tried to Flusterstorm, realized you can't do that because it's instant or sorcery, not non-creatures, so I think I need to swipe those out for spell pierces. Then I played against Tron in round three, and that was, again, it was a really good match. I ended up winning, had a lot of fun, and then the next round I ended up playing against, what was it? I think it was like the actual red-blue deck, and it went to game three. It was close, but I lost, and then I was just done with it. I think Chart, of course, is just a bad card.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get why it's in there, but honestly, I think it should be Expressive Iteration in there. I think it should be only two Demi Liches instead of four. And I think there should be an argument that Spell Pierce should be, two should be ran in the main. I think it would really help out the deck.
Was Demi Lich good enough?
Yes, except for the time I milled myself a bunch and revealed three out of four Demi Liches in my graveyard and couldn't do anything with them because they were the only thing in my graveyard.
Sure.
But the card itself was really good. There was a lot of... It gave me reach a lot of the time, like attacking, and literally sometimes just casting a bolt from your graveyard was really good, or Lightning Axe to like remove something out of the way. I really did like it. I just, again, four just seems way too much.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's comfortable two of would be perfect for it. But Dragon Rage Chandler was a house. That card, every time I played it, just felt amazing. I never didn't like that card.
Just play it with the monkey and you'll feel even better.
You just then, get double damage there.
It just sucks because if I play with monkey, then I feel like I might as well just not be playing red blue instead of playing Phoenix, but I'm too in love with Phoenix.
Yeah.
Also, I think it should be two Murktide instead of one because it actually does go really well with Demi Lich. Because there was one where I played a Murktide and he came in as, eight is the biggest you can make him.
Mm-hmm.
And then returned a Demi Lich and turned him into a 12, and it was just over.
Dude, yeah, people forget the other text that's on the Murktide. So, does that also count any graveyards, or is it just your graveyard?
Any, I think.
Okay, so that's a huge part of that card because if it's essentially like the old Planeswalkers where if you get yours first down, your opponent couldn't play there. So if you get your Murktide tied down and they Murktide, yours is just gonna grow bigger to their Murktide.
Oh, that's so gross.
I don't know if I'm not sure if that's how exactly
it might
works.
Yours.
I feel like it'd be too good if it said both. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's yours.
It could be. Yeah, you know what? This probably is. Yeah.
It's only instant sorcery. I was gonna say it never had the interaction, but Phoenix with it would work, but it's only instant sorcery.
Yeah.
Also, I think I only brought back a total of 3 Phoenixes. I weirdly enough just didn't see them. Like, never had them in hand, would faithless, or not faithless looting, but would draw a bunch and just never really saw them most of the time.
It's hard to, with that current iteration that you're running, with the lack of faithless looting, it's really hard to kind of churn through your deck because the spells are typically going to your hand. Like, Thought Scour does help put things into the bin, but it's kind of like a little bit randomized. And then your Serum Visions only gets you one card, which I think the list plays 4. And I don't know, are you playing Sleight of Hand too?
It plays 1 Sleight of Hand.
Yeah, and then without the flashbacks, you don't have the rebuy of just kind of, oh, I'm out of gas, just keep flipping kind of deal.
Yeah.
And when you start moving from that 1 mana mark to that 2 mana mark, like Chart of Courts, or there's that rebound card that's kind of new, that's kind of...
The red one.
Yeah, so once you start moving into those territories, like 2 mana is just, you know, it makes the equation a little bit more complex.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. I wanted to try it to see if it was worth, like, investing in, like, getting this deck, or if it was had the possibility of being good again. But unless we get another Faithless Looting, I just don't think Phoenix really can come back. It's definitely like a tier 2 deck.
Yeah, it's a slump. Do you think you could get away with Burning Inquiry? Burning Inquiry. Do you think you could get
away
with Burning Inquiry?
It's too random.
Okay.
Yeah, you can end up with like scenarios where you have Phoenix stuck in your hand instead of your instances of the sorceries, yeah, or that's where you get the blowouts.
Okay.
I still think we could have gotten Careful Study in the format. I think it would have been fine. No flashback.
It'll probably come at some point. I don't know when it's going to come, but they gave us Counterspell, and we kind of see how it just kind of slotted into the modern format.
It is everywhere.
Oh, by the way, I have definitely done the same thing with Flusterstorm before, too, where I bring it in thinking it's, you know, any non-creature spell. It definitely isn't.
I was so hyped. I was like, oh man, I'm going to blow him out. He just cast Chalice. And he was letting it resolve too. But then, like, I read the card and I was like, wait, I can't do that.
It's very honest of you.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd rather win properly instead of faking a win. Doesn't really give me information.
Yeah, when the Flusterstorm thing has happened, I've never done it because I'm just way too smart. But I've definitely cast a lot of Planeswalkers and watched people try to do that. And you're just like, yeah, no. They're like, but I'm like, read it again. They're like, oh.
Yep.
And that's usually, it's not, that card specifically is not like a main deck card. And it usually comes in and out of sideboards. You're not always playing it. When Storm's kind of hot or when like blue decks kind of get back on the rise again, you'll bring it in for like Counter Wars specifically. And then when those kind of go away, when we start moving towards like creature heavy metas, or for example, when we were dealing with Oko for that, you know, year, Flusterstorm was nowhere to be found. I mean, people still played it. It was just wrong.
I would like to apologize to JB, by the way, and Josh when he listens to this. I understand how you guys were missing triggers or Dragon Rage Chandler, because it took at least like 3 matches before like I would stare at the card before playing something and be like, all right, remember, you have to surveil first, because I missed so many triggers in like round 1 and 2.
Dude, yeah. And the surveil is so good. It's so
especially
important.
When your like goal is to play Phoenix, because you're just trying to put everything in the graveyard to hit the Phoenixes.
Or when you're playing Murktide and you just want to put a bajillion cards in the graveyard.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it seems, honestly, I did see a list at 5-0'd recently that was playing, like a blue-white list that was playing like 3 main deck Rest in Peace, and I'm sure the reason why it 5-0'd is because it was just housing all the Asmor decks, all the blue-red decks, and all the variants of those.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, I think the only deck that would combat that well would probably be the Hammer Time deck.
Hammer Time, Grief. Variants, you know, stuff like that, just because you have 3 main, like, dead main deck cards. Because Rest in Peace is, like, if you're going against, like, Scapeshift decks or the Amulet decks, the card is embarrassing.
Yeah.
But now you have, I think they still play Jace. There's a way to get rid of it, like, to get it back in your deck and get rid of it. And with Expressive Iteration, I mean, that's probably the number one card. Like, you were saying that you wanted Expressive Iteration in your deck, Jeff.
Yeah.
I think that card is so dominant in the sense that it just brings you so much gas that cards like Thoughtseize have kind of been put out of the format.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not to mention, like, I've noticed Narset's being played a lot more too.
Yep.
And it gets around that because you're not drawing, which is insane for 2 mana.
Yeah. I mean, when you realistically play it, the abilities are put one into your hand, put one into exile that you can play, and then the other one on the bottom, if I'm not mistaken. Or is it?
Yeah.
Sorry.
So at the bottom. So it's 2 mana draw 2, but you look at 3 and pick the best 2.
Yep.
And I think people are really starting not to get a grasp on like how seriously how good that card is, and because of how low the format is, you can't really afford to play Spell Snare just yet.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
All right, guys.
What did you do, Tony?
Oh, I played a lot of Pokemon Unite. I've been rocking that game. That game's been a lot of fun. And for my Magic related stuff, I've been like bargain hunting. I've been going to old baseball cards, random places, and just picking up random stuff. Just the guy there is a sports card dealer and he has Magic stuff. I say, let me take a look, and I just find gems left and right.
Hmm.
It's been pretty nice.
Two parts statement real quick. I made it up to expert in Pokemon Unite, so you got to catch up. And did you find any like real good gems, like anything that it was just like astounding to find?
Just the Brain Geyser for 25 cents.
Was it white border?
Mm-hmm. But it's $50, and it's Brain Geyser's like $50, and it's gem mint. It's like it's never been touched. It was kind of like eye opening. I was like, oh my god,
yeah. Damn.
Yeah. Plus, a lot of individuals don't know like what commons or uncommons are. So typically, when it comes to those guys, they just put a little bit of effort into it. It's like commons 25 cents, uncommons 50 cents, rares dollars, and they're just like, get this stuff out of my life. And then sometimes you're just like, there's a $40 card right there, quarter. Like, yep, sweet.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, but you got to know what you're looking for, because I have a big catalog of stuff, even sealed product that I can find. That I was just like, oh, this is this sealed? Yeah, I'll buy it. And it's like, it was $20 retail 15 years ago, but it's sealed now. It's like $120. And then I also found a Champions of Kamigawa poster. And the guy was like, let me look this up. I was like, oh, crap. He's going to look it up and he's going to see the price of it. He's like, can't find anything. Here's 20, $20, and I can flip that thing for about $100.
Jesus.
Yeah. So memorabilia kind of goes a long way.
Mm-hmm.
So the topics I want to kind of go into today, one was kind of inspired by a Facebook post or a friend of mine posting on Facebook talking about it. But realistically, has WotC or Wizards of the Coast given up on like a unified system where we can track points or things along that way outside of Arena? And then two, I just kind of want to mention power creep, because I know Jeff, you brought up something about power creep this week of how it's affecting Standard and what we're seeing with the Adventures of the Forgotten Realm in our chat. So it kind of inspired me to think of kind of the broader term of what power creep is. So right away with WotC giving up on a unified system, JB, we know that the Wizards event reporter is gone. Do you think WotC's ever going to give us that back or something similar to that system?
I mean, if they don't have a real reason to, they probably won't, because what's the point of developing something and handing it out to everyone unless there's something behind it? So I see them maybe working on the app a little more, but otherwise not really.
Companion app?
Yeah, the companion app.
Jeff, how about you?
So I feel like they're just giving up on everything. They're just like sticking to Arena. They'll still print paper, but I think they just don't care anymore about the pro scene or tracking points at all. Yeah, I mean, they might work on the companion app, but the companion app has so many problems already without adding more. So like, I mean, I just think Wizards is done with all that.
Yeah, it feels weird having to sign up for a tournament without a DCI number. It's like I have to give you my email or like an Arena account, if you will. It's just bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like I've noticed that like I've had it happen like the last two FNMs. Like people would be like, my phone's like almost dead. I don't want to use this app and drain the battery. How do I find out who my like pairings are? And like the store can't even like print out pairings.
Yeah, it's not great. It's I don't know how like where to go from here, to be honest with you. So
are stores gonna start having to carry like charging stations just so like if we ever have a big event with like 200 people, are they gonna have to have like a station where people can charge their phones to look up pairings?
I don't know if Companion's ever gonna go to a big in the current iteration. Now it's completely impossible to go to that next level to be more like I don't see Companion being used in like a 50 plus person event. And what I was surprised with the Wizards event reporter is they disabled it, but they didn't like leave like just a software that people could use, because it already existed, right? It didn't need to communicate with their server. They could have just done like an offline version of it. I don't know why that wasn't left behind for people, or for stores, I should say. Like the fact that a lot of stores have to go through a third-party system to avoid Companion, and those third-party systems, we've also experienced those, are kind of weird, where if I'm 3-0, and this is weird, this is kind of like not that big of a deal, but if I'm 3-0, usually you're at the higher tables from an FNM standpoint, you know?
Yeah.
And at these random tournaments that I've gone to that's on like Saturday and Sunday that use these applications, I'll be 3-0 and then I'm at table 7, but you know, a 1-2 matches at table 1. And that messes with my head, just thinking that, did I misreport the match?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, I get that sometimes. Like when you're in like a number that you feel you shouldn't be.
Yeah, I mean, I've had it happen at the old style PTQ systems where the only way I knew that my match was misreported because I was like, wait a minute, I should have gone up tables. This is round five, and I'm undefeated. Like I should have gone up. Why did I go down? Because you know, at the it's one thing to be at the rounds 1, 2, and 3. Round one, you might be at table 23, and then you might be at table 78, and then round two, same kind of distance, but you should always be creeping up. And then there's kind of like a threshold where it's only up from there on out. And the only reason I knew is because I was like, something's wrong. And I talked to my opponent. He's like, yeah, I'm 3-2. And I was like, wait, what? I got like a super paradon? And I was like, oh, my match just got misreported. It was really bizarre.
I had
But
that
the only way
happen.
I knew that was that.
I had that happen to me at States once. I sat down against my opponent, and I was weirded out that like I went down in numbers after being like 3-0. And I was like, "Hey man, are you 3-0?" And he goes, "No, I'm 2-1." I was like, "Well, maybe I got a paradon." But then they dropped off the match slips, and it tells you your points. And then I was like, "Wait, like this isn't right." And I went to talk to a judge, and he was like, "It's too late. The round has started."
Oh, that's
So
lame.
like, yeah.
They actually have a, they came up with a quick fix because that did happen quite often, especially like the Grand Prix level. Instead of like repairing the entire round, what they would do is swap your opponents. That's all they would do. So whoever was supposed to be in your seat, and they would just have to like manually enter that in. So like, let's say if you were supposed to be at, because whoever that you played against also has the wrong record, so they're playing against somebody. So you just like, you just, all you have to do is just swap the seats and you're done.
The worst
Whereas,
part was is like I'm pretty sure at the time like my opponent like was being scummy because he filled out the numbers and I was pretty like submissive back then when playing Magic. I wasn't very vocal or like now if I win, I'm filling it out. I don't even if you grab it, I'm gonna be like, nope, I won. I'm supposed to fill it out. Here we go. But he filled it out and I signed it. So like that meant he wrote down the numbers wrong. It could have been on accident, but I don't know. He kind of avoided me the rest of the tournament. Yeah,
I had opponents be like, I don't know if I'm gonna drop or not, so I'm gonna take the match slip and I'll think on it. And I was like, no, I'll take it. And if you want to drop, go tell the TO. Like, you don't have to hold this. I don't know what's the deal. It's like, I don't know what you're gonna do with it, but I don't need to get in an argument with the TO that that's one, yes, I signed this, but that's not what was happening, And that's like what the old argument was. And when they changed that system, it kind of played it out, but it's, people really aren't like that. A lot of people are just more honest. But the people that were like angle shooting back then, especially a guy to take the match slip after he lost, he's definitely scumbagging you.
Well, I mean, it's because it's just like, I don't want to call it like common knowledge, but it's just like a known thing, the winner. That's why, like, when I do my reporting on whatever, I always do my thing and then I show it to my opponent and go, is this good if I win?
Oh yeah,
Yeah.
I've been doing that too with the companion app.
It's just like common courtesy. That way, we're both on the same understanding. Like, does this look correct to you? Yep. All right. Hit accept or whatever. The key is you got to get really good with your fingers so you can double keystroke where you change the number and hit OK at the same time.
Oh, okay. I mean, it won't just show up on their phone, you lose.
Oh, they
I
might
mean, they
close it.
would, but then, they might be like, oh, I
What have
reported it
I?
wrong.
Yeah. What have I done? It's always weird when someone like that, I like if I win a round and then they report it like immediately, I'm like, oh, it already says I won. Like, this is weird. They were like, they did it. They were so quick to act.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that either, because, like, yeah, they're reporting it right, and I haven't had someone do it wrong. But we talked about this on the podcast on like episode 3, talking about companion app. You're at a tournament, someone gets mad, walks away, reports faster. Now you have this awkward moment of arguing with the TO.
Yeah. And then they have to be honest to say, no, I beat you, blah, blah. Or like, no, that I lost. And then it's like, now I gotta like reconstruct this match, have outside witnesses. That's probably why Companion will never be there. And the current match slip system's probably it's not the best system because it's just like so messy with all the paper, but it's probably the best system there is.
I definitely like have been switching back. Like I was using the companion app to keep track of life for a while, but I've switched back to pen and paper just in case there's something I can like pull it out and be like, look, these are the life totals. You can see that he went down here, he went down here.
Yeah, mainly the reason, the number one reason I use the life pad is because people constantly forget their fetches. And it's not malicious at all. They just do it and they're like, how am I at 17? I go, well, you went from 20 to 19, 19 to 18, 18 to 17, and you have three fetches in your graveyard. Like, oh, okay. And then that's kind of where I leave it at. Or it's like, oh, you shocked here. You forgot to add your shock. Those are the two most common things where life total discrepancies are like an issue. I go, well, you played that on tap, and the reason you played that on tap was so you could play this on turn two, and that's why I documented it here.
Yeah, I definitely forget fetches all the time.
Yeah. But So do you, JB, do you think we're going to be just focusing or hoping that a third party comes along, such as like a Channel Fireball or a FCG, and that become the new top of the mountain or the echelon?
I mean, I think you already kind of see that happening. I think we've talked about it before, but there's like big companies on the East Coast, West Coast, and Midwest that have been kind of stepping up and making those big 5K tournaments, 10K tournaments, whatever. And so with that, you have a lot of options, and you can do the traveling if you want to go to specific tournaments. But overall, it's not going to be like the old stuff.
Yeah, no one unified system.
Mm-hmm. No right. big tournament winner that'll be celebrated around the world for playing Magic good or whatever.
Sure.
We just need to find someone that can code to make a system for us to use. They'll make millions.
You don't even need it. You don't even need a system. All you need is just a reporter, and then you can just take that input and just, you know, if it's one, like, I guess a system, but like use Tournament Reporter or something like that, and then send the information to one central database and just make sure that anybody who is running this tournament, the tournament organizer, is not a shady person, right? And you just, there's a way to vet that.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
If multiple people like say that's not what happened, then it gets investigated, and you know, pretty much you have all the documentation, be like, all right, this guy's done running tournaments forever, he's out, stuff, something like that. And it would just be as simple as that, because the TCG player, we talked about that a while back, where it's like this weird point system we can buy into the tournament. It's just like kind of a workaround to get into the tournament. You can either earn them or buy them. But the SCG tour, they have a point system, and they have point leaders, just like the NRG series does. And they don't need like a Wizard event reporter to keep track of that. They just kind of keep track of the same person. The only thing now is we don't have a DCI to kind of identify a singleton person. So like, let's say me, Tony, and another person named Tony with the same last name will sign up. Well, it's got to be dictated by email, correct?
Yeah.
Which is, again, a little weird. You're like, I'm playing against this email address.
Well, that's Tony, like this, wasn't this? Yeah. The companion app is like another thing about that too. Like, you look at it and your name on there a lot of the time, I've noticed, isn't your actual name.
Yeah, it's your arena's like handle or something along those lines.
Yeah, and so like that like throws me off sometimes, because I'm like, I'm not gonna shout across the room. Whereas
Master 2020.
Yeah, or Smoke 420XX. Like, I'm not gonna yell that at a tournament. So.
Dude, I definitely played against someone with a Sonic email name that I thought was pretty great.
That's fine. A little kid's not gonna get, you know, a little kid's dad's not gonna get mad if you yell, hey Sonic, yeah, 1 2 3, yeah. You know, if you're like McGee 49.
Yeah, I just think it's funny that people sign up with those like goofy emails, and then you get to see them and you're like, what are you doing over there?
Yeah, couldn't you have made a separate email that was professional? Well, whatever. It's like, no, I've been using this forever, and I keep applying for jobs, and I don't know why I don't get them. Because I'm Master 2020. All right. So I think we kind of went over all those things, and I'm hoping that something comes along from Wizards, at least in the fall, because it's been kind of just like this summer of silence from them. It's a little weird.
I don't think we're going to hear anything. Storm.
Yep. I think they're done. Anything.
Yeah, they're just going to weather the storm, and then we'll all just fade away and cry.
I hate that card.
Oh, weather the storm. Yeah, I think it doesn't really matter to them what's going to happen, because people will still play paper. People will still play MTG ONA. So I feel like it doesn't really matter.
Sure.
Even if like they stop supporting Magic, which we know they won't, they had like their best year last year ever. Like, there's plenty of card games that like even stop getting printed that have like mass followings. Like, people still play the Naruto card game, and that game hasn't been printed in like 5 years.
Yeah.
And like, they have tournaments where it's still even like people organize like giant tournaments. So like,
they have the world championship at like Gen Con every year.
Even though the card game's not printed, I didn't know they had it at Gen Con still.
They have the Austin Powers card trading card game championship there every year too.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, it doesn't matter. Yeah. It doesn't. I think it sucks that WotC might not like support pro play anymore, because like personally, I always liked watching like pro tournaments and stuff like that. It was the best way I felt to watch unplay mistake Magic. Like, it rarely happened, and it was good for like learning and seeing what the meta was like if you were jumping in. But I imagine if SCG and NRG and all of those and like Hot Sauce Gaming all take off, they'll just replace, the Pro Tour will be replaced by them. Like, you'll watch all the pros from their different sections.
I would just love for them to come up with like one unified system, but you're also talking with like 20 TOs trying to agree on one thing.
Never.
Yeah.
That's giving up too much money.
I guess I'm just going to miss the Magic Elitist in me is going to miss the production that Wizards of the Coast or Magic put on compared to all the other TCGs aside from Hearthstone, which I know is not technically a TCG, but it's a card game. Like, those both have like high production value, where if you were to try to see something on the same level as like the Yu-Gi-Oh or even like Pokemon or whatever, we don't really see that level. And believe me, I've looked, there's nothing like from the production level that's even close or similar to. They have like a stage and they play at a stage, but it's nowhere in depth of like commentating and all that.
Well, yeah, Magic Pro Tour is crazy, man. Like, I was like, I remember the first time I watched a Pro Tour and I saw them sitting there in the finals in that epic room with like the trophy in the background, the TVs. Yep. There's like no one around. I was like, I want to do that. I want to be at that table. That looks so epic.
Yeah, the production of just seeing like the cards that they saw in their hand, and there's a judge there just kind of glancing, walking away, whispering into a mic like he's got this in their hand, and then just how quickly it's like showing up and like a little sidebar that you could see. It was just, like I said, the production is unbelievable.
I know Tony has watched this, but have you ever watched the original first world tournament, Jeff?
I have not.
Oh, it's a blast. There's a guy who's judging who looks like Bubbles from the Trailer Park Boys. There's two cheater, like notorious cheaters who are
Mike
who are
Long
playing
and somebody
for
else.
It.
Oh,
Mike
okay.
Long and Mark Justice or whatever.
Oh,
so
yeah,
it's like both of them trying to out-cheat one another without the judges or the cameras noticing. And, you know, like knocking their dice and being like, hey, I was at 16, right? Yeah, 16.
Mm-hmm.
God, because no one's keeping track of life because they didn't have like the...
Well, you had to do it by dice. It was in the rules. You had to do it by dice. And then they were asking the judges to keep track of their mana and then counting it, and essentially just trying to slip an extra, like, okay, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, hold on to that. Black mana, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5. And they're like, okay, I have 7 black mana. And it's like, wait, what? Like, where are you getting these numbers from? And it's like, oh, well, I'm going to drain life you for the win.
And then whenever they were doing their counting, the other one would just start talking over them to try and, like, mess them up the whole time.
Man.
It's a blast. You should watch it if you get a chance.
Yeah, you'll have to send me that link sometime.
Yeah. Sure.
All right, guys. So Power Creep, I know I brought it up kind of earlier, and what it's kind of, we've seen it, I've been playing, you know, we've all been kind of playing Magic for the last 11 years, and we've definitely seen some serious Power Creep, but kind of the terminology I like to use for Power Creep is when cards as a whole get upgraded. I don't know what the actual term is, but, or just overall power level. So if we were to go back to something as simple as like Alpha or Beta, like cards that are like green and 3 for like a giant spider, clearly are no longer applicable for Magic. Or even cards like specifically Sarah Angel and Baneslayer Angel, where they have the same mana cost, but one is clearly just head and shoulder above the other one. So JB, give me a kind of a simple power creep that we've seen in like the last 10 years.
I mean, there's the 1/1 white creature that turned into Elite Vanguard, which was a 2/1. Is like a good example, but other than that, I know you said there was one from like Dragons of Tarkir.
Dragon
that was
Hunter.
Yeah, Dragon Hunter, which is essentially Elite Vanguard with two extra abilities stapled onto it.
Yeah, or Savannah Lions, if you will. So Elite Vanguard was kind of like the poster child of M10, and it was like, oh my god, like Savannah Lions is back. I can't believe they did this.
At Comet.
I played that card, Boros, all day.
Yeah, and then it definitely moved up to like Dragon Hunter, and I think the last iteration that I remember was probably even before Dragon Hunter. There was one in RTR that was like pro multicolor.
Wasn't that a 2-drop?
No, it was a 1-mana 2/1 that was pro multicolor.
Yeah, I remember.
I forget
that.
The name of it. Yeah,
it was a rare, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Or maybe that was from Theros.
Yeah.
From Theros. Jeff, give me another one. A clear example of just things kind of ramping up.
So like another good one is Megrim. It's 3-mana enchantment, black and 2. Whenever an opponent discards a card, it deals 2 damage to that player. And that was in, I think its last printing was Magic 2010 or M10. And then literally the next set in M11, they printed Liliana's Caress, which is an enchantment for a black and 1 instead of 3. And whenever an opponent discards a card, that player loses 2 life. There's slight differences where like, I think damage can tend to get around things that loss of life can't, because doesn't loss of life still consider damage, but damage isn't loss of life?
So there's things that would be like Phyrexian on life, something like that.
Yeah,
like,
where
damage is life. Well, damage is converted into poison counters, but loss of life isn't. So there's like minor nuance, but it just doesn't really exist too much.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, functionally, like Liliana's Caress is just better.
Like, right, but it's like in those corner cases of like Phyrexian and Unlife, that's why it works with like Ad Nauseam, because you're not taking damage anymore. You're just losing life, and you can lose unlimited of that. Whereas if you were to take an Ad Nauseam that took damage, well, you'd be accumulating poison counters to then end up dying. That's just those really small nuances, which was why decks like that exist. But yeah, so power creep as a whole, it's just, we've seen it over the years, and there are things that force power creep, like Planeswalker's an example. Jeff, what you got?
So, like, Planeswalkers tend to, like, force power creep because, like, older cards don't interact with them. As you print more Planeswalkers, you can't really, you know, like, Doomblade isn't even good anymore because, like, it doesn't hit Planeswalkers. And, like, they've even printed, like, 2-mana spells that say kill target creature or Planeswalker. I think most of them say, like, have restrictions of, like, cost 3 or less. But definitely have to increase stuff by the more stuff you have come out. So, like, that power creep just keeps happening and happening because old stuff just isn't good enough anymore. And
right,
it's like an endless cycle. The more power you add, the worse old cards get. So you have to print more powerful cards, and it's just an endless cycle.
Yeah, I mean, we see this every single time something new to the game gets brought. So, like, Planeswalkers is, like, a big example that everybody knows, because when they got brought into the game, there was a lot of weird rules interactions. They were legendary. And then equipment was another big one, because I think equipment started in Mirrodin. It started in Mirrodin. I don't think there's equipment before that, and if there was, it was some strange worded thing that really didn't act as an equipment. But all the cards in Magic's past have no knowledge of equipment, so they really can't deal with it other than, like, just your generic shatter. But when Planeswalkers came out, they were so unique that, like, combat was different, how Lightning Bolt or even cards like Lava Spike interacted, where you could redirect damage. Now it's kind of all simplified, but we had 5 years of just dealing with, like, I'll target you with my Lightning Bolt and then redirect it to the Planeswalker.
I remember so many times having to ask, like, can I do this? Can I deal damage to this with this? Like, because there were so many weird interactions with that.
Yeah,
it was real annoying.
Like, you can redirect target, but you can't redirect not target.
Yeah, so, like, a Skullcrack couldn't... A Skullcrack still can't deal damage to a Planeswalker, right?
It used to be able to. Yeah, I think it can. What I was more referring to is, like, how, what is it? Is it Volcanic Fallout that says deal 2 damage to all creatures and both players?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't redirect that to a Planeswalker.
For some reason, I thought you could. I don't remember.
I thought you couldn't... Or maybe it's you can't redirect your own. Because I remember... I remember watching it in FNM when it was Jund versus Boros. Someone played Volcanic Fallout. They were both at 2, and he tried to redirect, I think, to his Planeswalker.
Oh, yeah, you can't do that. I know that for sure. I know that for a fact. You know what? You're probably right, because why would they not make the rule mirrored?
Yeah.
Yeah, such weird rules, but they had, like, weird nuances, and now they're, a lot of things are just kind of, like, straightforward. You can attack the Planeswalker now, or what have you. I think you'd always attack him, to be honest, but it's just mainly with damage spells and how... There was, like, a mass errating in one of the sets where everything got errated to, like, any target instead of just creature or player, because at the time it was, like, you could redirect anything that you target to a player to a Planeswalker, and that got changed. Which made cards like... It made things like Leyline of Sanctity really weird, because now you can Lightning Bolt adjacent the Mind Sculptor, but before you couldn't because you couldn't target them with the Lightning Bolt, so that got really weird, too.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, I think that's for the better, to be honest.
It's just clear. I want to do this, but it's like, nah, well, first you have to do this and then redirect it. Some of the issues that we see with things like power creep is clearly when one color gets too good, and that's when we actually start seeing, like, banning. So, like, in the last couple of years, we've seen the green just be absolutely absurd with cards like Oka.
Green-blue.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, green-blue this last, like, 3 years has been insane.
Well, we also had, like, Fires of Invention, you know? Like, those cards also got banned, too, and when things like, a prime example of this, vehicles. When we first got vehicles, they wanted to push the mechanic. And when they pushed the mechanic, what ended up happening was the colorless 2-mana Smuggler's Copter got played in every deck. There was no cost to playing it.
After Copter was gross.
Yeah. So I think that's, like, the problem when they do these new mechanics or, like, keywords or try to, you know, vehicles were a new thing. And we kind of see them regularly now, but the first iteration of them were so pushed, and then just even going into the future just a little bit, they were still kind of pushed, and then they finally tapered off. When they tapered off, we're at the equipment that exists now, which they're not great, but there are corner cases like Elsa's whatever, that 2/2, the one that makes cats, and then you can crew it to make more cats or populate or whatever the hell it does.
Sky Sovereignty is playing some Karn list too.
Mm, yeah, I think that's because it's like an art. It's a colorless way to like kill planeswalkers, I think, or creatures.
Mm-hmm. And you can just animate it with Karn. That's you don't have to crew it.
So when they do things like power creep, like one of the biggest prime examples of this, or an odd example of this, is like when they want to change a metagame. So back in 2010, but are all the core sets 1 year behind or 1 year ahead? Like M10 came out in 2009. Yes. Or am I thinking of that incorrectly?
I believe okay. So, yeah.
So in 2009, M10 was printed, and they printed a card that was clearly geared to fight one specific deck, which is Great Sable Stag. And if we look at like a card before that in the past, which was Train Darmadon, green 1 for a 3/3 elephant. That's all it is. Great Sable Stag has the same casting cost, the same power and toughness, but it can't be countered, and it has Pro Blue and Black, which is so bizarre that they would do such like a power creep to that level to just directly target one deck. And that's like their answer to fixing like their own power creep or their own problem.
I feel like that card in general that has like progressed over the years, even because I mean, it costs one more, but what was that? There was that Ceratops that couldn't be countered and you could pay a green and it'd get trample, reach,
gain haste or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a different card because the CMC. And it has an activated ability. It's kind of different. When the CMC and the power and toughness are like a mirror of one another, or even if it's like green 1/4, there was like a 4/3 that got printed in one of those sets that was like laughably bad, but people were like, oh my God, this is going to break standard. And it just didn't because it was like, oh, Trained Armadon was good once, so therefore this must be good. And it just never was.
What was that 3 green for a 5/4 or 5/3?
Oh, the old one that was like, it was like.
No, it was pretty new. It's got trample. It was from Eldraine.
Are you talking about Yorvo? Because no, he doesn't have trample.
No, it's like Wilt Leaf whatever.
That doesn't have trample.
Oh, I thought it did.
No, it just can't be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And it was a core set, I thought. Maybe it was Eldraine.
It was definitely Eldraine.
Had to be. All I can think of is Lovestruck Beast for that like green and 2 for like a 5/5, but that has like a condition on it.
Even with the card he mentioned, like if we're talking about like just even like functional, like even in that set they printed, yeah, there was Lovestruck Beast, which was a green and 2 for a 5/5, but then they also printed a 5/4 for 3 green. And there was also Yorvo that came in as like a 4/4 for 3 green.
Right.
Green was just so pushed.
I was about to say, I guess green was pretty good.
They always push green, though. Like, your answers to, like, fairies was green. And the Triceratops was an answer to, what was it, like, blue-white or blue-black that was at the time doing really good. Seems yeah. Green just gets everything, and they push it every time.
Well, they've also, like, mismanaged power level, right? We've seen cycles just be completely lopsided. So, for example, like, the Titan cycle or even the God cycle. The first time, like, the Gods came out, specifically the Amon Kett ones, Hazret was the best by a lot, and the other four, like, did not see play. Maybe the green one did. That one gave Trample Nylea. But Hazret, that was played so heavily, and the other four mythics that were the cycle were just, like, not balanced correctly.
Doesn't that happen with, like, every cycle every, though?
Kind of.
Yeah, I mean, Cryptic Command had it. I mean, it does happen with most cycles. The only cycle that was, like, a bad cycle that I can remember that was in the Mythic slot was the core set that came after the Titans. So the M11 had Primeval, like, the Titan cycle. M12 had the Titan cycle. And then M13 had, like, the Soul of Ravnica's.
I was going to say the Primordials didn't seem that good either.
Nah, they were pretty bad, too.
Well, the green one, I guess, EDA'd.
I got burned.
Yep.
So they usually try to, like, when they stick to, like, a color theme, they try to make them isolated or to, like, that color's theme. So, for example, like, the white primordial, Swords to Plowshares, everything, whereas the green one destroyed, was it just specifically a land? I think it did that. And then there was other things amongst those two.
I guess the other cycle, too, would be the Gear Hulks, the blue. The green one saw play for a little bit, but the blue one was clearly, like, just better than all of the other ones.
Oh, yeah, Torrential?
Yes. That card still sees play.
Dude, yeah, it's awesome.
The cycle from Modern Horizons 2 is pretty good.
Which one?
Endurance.
The free Evoke guys.
They all see play.
Yeah, all of them see play.
See, that's like a success when it comes to that. It's like, oh my God, we did it. Or, wow, like, good job. Like, we all thought there was going to be one really bad one, which I thought was going to be Fury at the first point.
All right, so good.
All of them are good. They're just all good. Mm-hmm. And I think they have a solid design. And they made sure not to make the blue one like too busted. It can only interact with things on the stack, which is perfect.
I was just going to say the blue one, I'm happy that the blue one sees the least play out of all of them.
Yeah.
It still sees play and it still is good. It's just, it's nice to know that the blue free spell isn't taking over the format.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, I mean, we saw it with what Modern Horizons was the first one.
Oh my god, yes.
The Force of Whatever cycle. We saw that Force of Negation was clearly awesome. Force of Vigor was definitely playable. And then the other three just see zero play.
Garbage.
I don't even... What did the red one do?
It made 2-3 ones that...
Oh, yeah.
Had haste, but you couldn't do it on your turn, so they were worthless.
No, you could do it on... Oh, yeah, you're right. They didn't even get haste.
No, because it was remove them at the end of the turn, right?
Yeah, they were terrible.
I guess you could do it at the end of your opponent's turn because the trigger for that is already up, which means you'd have them for the next turn, but still, 3-1s are not good.
Nope. The
white one was like a glorious anthem, and then the black one was like creatures that enter the battlefield this turn.
That one might have application in the future if there's some like super token deck that takes over.
Yeah. So bad. I'd rather just play Fury and kill all of them.
Yeah, for sure. So we've seen cycles kind of go like they've power creep is something that's gonna the new threshold or the bottom threshold kind of always go. I guess the floor is always moving up, and we see the ceiling go way too high sometimes, and then that ceiling comes back down, and then we kind of get like an even balance. But when the floor and the ceiling are just too big of a gap, that's when we end up with just like absurdities or necessary bans. So,
oh, you mean half of Eldraine?
Yeah, exactly. That's why people are just so uninterested in Standard, and that's specifically too because of Eldraine.
Mm-hmm.
Does that set have more banned cards than any other set? I feel like it has to.
It's super close with the Artifact Affinity, and maybe that one, I forget what they call it, it was like the Urza block when they had all the crazy cards that you just draw your deck over and over.
Memory Jar, that whole cycle got banned, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the cycle of cards, but those cards in there, like Talarium Academy, all those.
Yeah, there's like a big set of them.
Yeah, it's bad. I think Mirrodin might have the record for the most banned cards.
I think right now Wizards realizes that their power creep has gone too far, though. And like AFR, yeah.
Adventures of the Forgotten Realm. I don't know.
Is a prime example. Like the set was, I thought the set was good. I enjoyed the flavor of it. I think the cards are unique. There is nothing that is like, oh my god, in the set. There's nothing that's like just dominating the formats. And I think what the goal is from Wizards now is to just lower the power level a little and like wait it out. Like what October is when Eldraine and Ikoria rotate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once that happens, the format will kind of even out and open up a little more. As long as we don't get something busted in Innistrad, which... Innistrad has always had busted stuff in it, so we'll find out.
My question is, how much do we focus on Standard versus the other formats at this point? Because you look at, like, attendance turnout for paper play, and it's like, Standard's got, you know, like, 8 people, but Modern and Legacy combined have, like, 3/4 of the people at the store, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but to be fair, again, like we stated, like, no one wants to play with Eldraine. Like, who wants to sit down and have everything they play get killed by a Bone Crusher Giant and then bounced by a Brazen Bower, followed up by a Lovestruck Beast, or, you know, playing the, what's the red mythic equipment?
Emberclave, that card's, like, the biggest headache for everyone.
Yep. Like, you know when people always make jokes about people who leave 2 blue up? In Standard, it's about 2 red. Like, 2 red is nerve-wracking when your opponent is swinging, because you're like, I could definitely live if I don't block, but if I don't and they play Embercleave, I just die.
Also, you don't get to play, unless you're like an avid or like a big advocate of Magic Online or Magic Online MTGO, you don't really get to play Modern that much. Whereas Arena, once you get your Standard deck, you can get 100 matches in a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're like, I know the format, I'm bored of the format. Whereas if you go back pre-Arena, you had to go on Magic Online, which again has a pretty high price to get in. And then on top of that, your deck's rotating, so you have to kind of manage the market. And the people that are playing at the FNM level are only playing 5 rounds a week. You know, 5 matches with their deck a week. And it can be more, obviously, if you do testing and stuff like that. But just I think there's just, no matter what happens, Standard's always going to just get burnt out. And I don't think it's a relationship to power creep, even though it does get annoying. It's just, that's just the way it's going to be.
I was going to say, how come we used to never get burnt out of Standard? But I feel like that's because back when we used to play Standard FNMs, it was because Modern and stuff like that was really hard to find FNMs for.
Yeah.
On top of that, a lot of the tournaments were Standard. So mm-hmm. now you don't have a lot of interest in Standard, and it's getting taken over by all these side guys like we were talking about earlier. And that kind of pushes Standard out of the tournament scene.
Right.
Agreed. I also just personally think Standard used to be a lot more fun than it is now in general.
Well, we don't, but I mean, the biggest issue that we have with Standard and probably all the online meta is you get the decks are discovered before the cards are even out.
Yeah, so there's like, everything's no rogue decks.
Yeah. It's not even that there's no rogue decks. If there are rogue decks, they're already known because you have everybody 2 weeks playing it before you can even play it in person. And that in that 2 weeks period, like I just said, you could play 100 matches in a weekend. Imagine that, like quantify that by every player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just not good.
It's just, it's a different world. That's all it really is.
I think that's part of the reason they're printing all these crazy cards too, is just to try to keep shaking up online so people don't get bored. Because yeah. when you have a card that literally randomly generates something, you can never really be sure it's going to give you what you need.
We'll definitely add a fun element, but then there's both sides. Someone has to get the feel bad side where I got super unlucky, and someone has to be like, oh my god, I hit the one of that I could get at and win this set, you know, win this match.
Oh, agreed.
So with power creep, kind of, we see it the most in Standard right now, just because it's been absurd. But we've seen power creep go the other way in the other direction, and Wizards have made that correction. So the biggest one I can think of was all the way up through 7th edition, we had Counterspell, and that was just like a mainstay of a format. And then at some point, Counterspell stopped, and in like 8th and 9th edition, it'd be like split between like Remove Soul. I mean, that might have always been a thing, but kind of like the negate style effects. And then we finally got to like M10, where they just printed straight up Cancel, which is just Counterspell, but for one mana more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just their way of like recognizing that people don't enjoy Counterspell, and the way that we need to fix this style of card is we just need to add mana to it. And we've seen different kind of variants in red, especially like Jeff. What are the biggest red ones that you can see?
Like downgrades and stuff. Well, like we had Bolt, but then obviously like Chain Lightning came out, which was made a sorcery. There's Lava Spike, which is gone. It just only hits players, and it's a sorcery. That's a card I don't think you can ever like make better. Like, and if you think about it, Counterspell is even a downgrade from Mana Drain.
Yes.
Like, Mana Drain was insane.
Well, Mana Drain used to have a drawback. Mm-hmm. Mana Drain is if I countered a 5-mana spell and I didn't spend all 5 of your mana, I got 3-mana burn. That's gone.
Fair. This is fair.
So that was kind of like the restriction of that. Like, you got to use the mana, but if you didn't use all of it, you were punished.
If you want another good example of card type that has kind of gotten weakened over the years, you can look at the Wrath of God type card.
Mm. Oh, yeah. That's true.
Because they just make it more restrictive in color, or they add an extra mana to it pretty much in every set.
Most board wipes are 5-mana now, and like even the first functional reprint of Wrath of God in Standard was Day of Judgment, and it literally was just kill the board. There was nothing about regenerate.
Yeah, exactly. So it was kind of shifted, even though like regenerate really wasn't a thing anyways. Like,
hey, Troll was great.
I was going to say Thrun was definitely being played at that time.
That's fair. I think they got away from like regeneration, but then Day of Judgment
come back either.
Yeah, Day of Judgment became whatever the 5-mana equivalent the first one. Like, there's End Hostilities, there's Fumigate, and Fumigate they kind of be like, okay, we're gonna give you an extra mana, but you get an additional effect with it, which is like, okay, every creature you destroy, you get an extra life, or you'll have something along the lines of like Settle the Wreckage, where it only exiles or does something like that to attacking creatures. So it's kind of like, oh, you get a 4-mana Wrath, but it only works on things that are attacking.
And gives your opponent a bajillion lands.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And then we have the newest one. I was Shatter the Sky, which was 5-mana. And if a player has a creature destroyed that costs 4 or more, they draw a card.
Yeah.
There was one that everyone was scared from the Viking set.
Doomscar, the one that has Foretell.
Yeah. Yeah.
That card's kind of bad too, though, because if you don't foretell it right away and you're not able to cast it for 3 on turn 4, or you need a board wiper on turn 4 and that's what you draw, You're just it's so bad.
That card would have been great 8 years ago, 7 years ago. Would have been fantastic. Would have been hyped. Yeah. Just in this day and age, that the game is no longer about just creatures. It's really planeswalker centric, and even things that are not planeswalker centric, support cards such as like the Great Henge are just so powerful that it's like, yeah, you wrath my board, but I also drew five cards off those five creatures I casted, so I still have I'm still loaded in my hand.
Another Eldraine card.
Yeah. God. So yeah, I know, Jeff, you said things that are like capped from like power level standpoint, things like Lightning Bolt. Would do you think there's ever a chance of seeing a better Lightning Bolt?
I like, as a burn player, I'd love to see it. I'd love to get a one mana even sorcery that's a deal four. But the closest I think we have is there's a two mana spell that deals four damage to each player, I think it is. And that's two mana. Yeah. Yeah, and it deals four to you, or like Fire Blast is still weird because you can't put that in every red deck, and like you have to sacrifice two mountains to make it free just to deal four. I don't think we could ever get a one mana four or damage. That would be just too good.
Yeah, I mean, I've thought that in the past. I like when they printed the Triomes, my eyes got open. I was like, whoa, they did this.
But those also, so if Triumph said you took three damage to untap them, I'd probably be worried, but they have to come into play tap. Like, yes, it hits three colors. That's awesome. I think the Triumphs are good.
Yeah.
But like, you add a one mana four spell, burn, like, just doesn't that just make them two turns faster now?
What? The Triumphs existed?
No, no. If burn got a one, or if red got a one mana four damage spell.
Oh yeah, it's one. If we start looking at like the math of it, so the typical mana per damage, and that's kind of how the burn deck is designed now. Your every one mana you spend should accumulate three damage at least. And we have kind of abnormalities to that, but when you play a Goblin Guide on turn two, typically it gets one hit in at the minimum, or sometimes zero if you're unlucky, but sometimes one and then two. So that's a one mana investment for four damage. And spells that are not consistent damage sources like Monastery Swift Spear or Soul Scar Mage or what have you, or Goblin Guide, they don't really exceed one mana for three damage. You have Lava Spike, you have Rift Bolt, which is kind of a workaround, and then you have Spectacle. What's the deal three? Skewer the Critics.
Yeah, Skewer the Critic.
So I think that's the threshold that we will never get something from a mana rate to that high. We have gotten one mana deal four damage, which is in like Flame Slash, but it's obviously just targeted to one thing. But it's very similar to like Mill, where we haven't seen like a one mana Mill card, aside from Archive Trap, which is conditional. We haven't seen like one mana mill 10. It's always been at least a minimum of two mana. And that's kind of like the perfect amount where it's supposed to be. It's mana spent for this effect. But yeah.
Agreed. So
yeah, it's a weird thing with Lightning Bolt where it's like, I don't think, so that it's what I mean by like it's capped is its threshold is like red is can only ever get up to three damage. Anything more than that will require additional requirements, whether it be Phyrexian mana in the future, who knows, or some kind of free
downside.
Mana. Yeah, or a cost along with it.
Hey, I got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
What is the name of that creature that does the show and tell ability?
Like, are you talking about like functional reprints, or like what you're talking about?
There's the creature that does it.
I don't know the name of it. It's three mana, and then it's blue and tap, and then you can cast something from your hand.
Gotcha. Because I was going to say, you'll never see anything like Show and Tell again. Just three mana, get a thing. Remake,
yeah. Right. I mean, they've kind of reworded some of the new stuff, because if you ever look at like old abilities, that specific, like Nivineral's Disc, right? Mm-hmm. That card doesn't refer to Planeswalkers. It just doesn't. And there's no way to print, there's no way to errata it. Or they could errata it to say Planeswalkers, but they just made a different version of the card, which is basically Oblivion Stone.
Yeah, I watched that video about judge questions. And something about using Planeswalkers with that card to scum your opponent and see what they were going to put down by going, oops, I didn't know I could put Planeswalkers on the field.
Yeah, there's definitely cheating abilities. I mean, this is one of the things that kind of goes into, we talked a little bit earlier about Fluster Swarm. It's like knowing what people's cards do and being able to identify when someone's trying to angle shoot.
Yeah.
And that's just one of those things like, well, I put this down, but you flipped it. Whoops, I didn't know. And then you're like, oh, I'll put this down instead. I mean, the rule should be you don't get to put anything down.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, whoops, you messed up. Sorry. I know that's extreme, but that's real.
So, like, you're talking about cap cards. You'll never see a Wheel of Fortune, right? Mm-hmm. You'll never see anything like that again.
Well, technically we got close with Wheel of Misfortunes.
We've had three different. We had Reforged of Soul, which is Miracled. We had Wheel of Fate. We've had versions of that, but yes, exactly. 3-mana draw 7. We haven't seen that.
Yeah, we won't have a functional reprint.
Same thing with like Force of Will. Has Force of Negation as another option that's not as good.
Pact of Negation.
Yeah.
So from like a functional standpoint, like we can get close, and there are nuances to it, and they do come up. For example, if you're at one life, you can't Force of Will a Lightning Bolt. You can Force of Negation it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like those things do matter, and it like from like a player standpoint, understanding those nuances can be the reason you win or get extra percentage points in a match.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've seen things be capped. I'm trying to think, like, have they done a 1-mana giant growth? And I guess they did like the Delve one, which is just ridiculous. +6/+6, become immense.
Yeah. There's also mutagenic growth, which is 2. I mean, it's 2, not 3, but you can pay 2 life.
We can do a whole episode about the
Phyrexian mana.
No, Wizards mistakes.
Yeah.
Wizards mistakes. What has been a mistake? But yeah, ultimately, those kind of cards, yeah. Like Phyrexian mana was a mistake, and there's no way to fix it.
Mental Misstep did like legitimately break Legacy.
Vintage, Modern. Yeah. Just not standard, because everybody's like, oh, everything at 1-mana sucks. The world's will play 2-mana stuff.
You can counter Delver. That was it.
Even that wasn't good.
Yep.
All right, guys. So I think we nailed a lot of things about Power Creep. As always, I always have a question of the week, and I know I kind of gave you... So as always, I'll ask you guys what the question of the week is. And this one is referring to a rules change or something added to Magic, but not so much like a card type, but a new zone. If you were to add a new zone into Magic, what would that be? I'm going to start with you, Jeff.
So I kind of like thought about 2, but I was thinking more of a like field zone.
Got it. Mm.
Like kind of like how Yu-Gi-Oh has like field cards. I know we have like world enchantments, which are kind of the same, but like, I mean like a legitimate like field card, like I don't know what it would be exactly for Magic, because again, enchantments just do that. But I always like the concept of that, or like even like an extra deck.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to look this up after the show, but the reminder of like world enchantments. If I have like a Concord Crossroads and someone else plays a world enchant, does it destroy my Concord Crossroads?
No.
Are you sure? I thought it did.
Didn't Concord Crossroads get errated to just say enchantment?
No, I think they still. You know what? You might be right. They might have just got rid of world enchantment completely, but I thought they didn't.
Because I think, wasn't it only called a world enchantment because it's supposed to, it affects both players? That was the concept of that term.
Oh, yeah. They were trying to delineate the difference. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. A field card, I don't know. I thought it'd be kind of cool. Like something that affects both, like, but specifically, it'd be like just in general, all elves get, you know, +1/+1, or all elves get reach.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's not a bad idea. Like the world enchant where both things have to exist. No, I looked it up. World enchant is still a thing.
It is.
Yes. I think the rule on it, I'm going to look in the specific. It's still, yeah, that's what I thought. It's world enchant. So I think the rule is they're treated as like, I guess they're, are these just, okay. I'll look it up after the show. Either way, I think enchant or world enchant is like a legend rule. Like it's a legendary enchantment.
So yeah, so we do have field cards. All right, they just don't make them anymore.
Well, they're so confusing.
Well, how about you, JB, if you could change a rule or add something?
So I'm not a creative guy, but the only thing I could think of is something like a hero at the start, like you had in the WoW TCG. So you had like a hero that you would equip with stuff, and then you would get abilities off of it. So obviously not the exact same, but
it's something where you have...
Huh?
It's called Hearthstone.
Yeah, Hearthstone, I guess. You're right.
Or Commander.
Yeah.
Commander like... is not the same.
Hearthstone
or Companion.
Hearthstone would be the closest, I think, just because you don't have to pay anything for it. It's an ability that you have.
Well, yeah, the WoW TCG literally turned into Hearthstone. Like, the cards in Hearthstone are from the WoW TCG.
A lot of them are. They're not like a one-to-one, because, well, there's a lot of similarities, for sure.
Yeah.
And just, like, the overall mechanics was, like, smarter. The WoW TCG was weird.
I bought a box at States, actually, that same States that I ended up getting cheated out of my 3-0. They had a box for like $70, and I was like, sure, like I heard there's valuable cards in here, and I opened some flying mount that was like $125, like the scratch off where you could get it in the actual WoW game, and I sold it and bought like two boxes of Magic, I think.
Yeah, those things were so popular when they came out. I think Spectral Tiger was like the number one known thing.
$500.
Yeah, it's more than that now, I think.
Yeah. I don't think it's actually worth, the card itself's worth something, but you can get it without the code. No.
Okay.
They just like completely, anybody who like spent lots of money to get that scratch off just got, or bought accounts with that on it, just got screwed.
Burned.
I mean, that happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about you, T-Bone?
All right. Well, so I'm calling this the dead zone. And what that means is if I play a card, I'm going to just give you an example of a card. White, white, white. Exiled, or put target card into the dead zone. This card is removed from the match.
So you're talking about super exiled.
Yeah. Like, you can't shuffle this back in your deck in games 2 and 3. It is out.
Whoa.
Oh. See, but there's problems with that, because then what if you're presenting a 59-card deck?
That would be, you would make rules. They now have whatever was registered is one less. It's
or
it's,
what if
it's
they're
still
forced...
or it's just, it's still considered part of your deck. It's just no longer shuffleable.
Or they have, they're forced to add like more cards from their sideboard.
That would be weird, because if I were to get more than 16 cards, you know, like with your 15 card sideboard plus your 60 card
deck,
it would just be you are considered, this card is to be considered in your deck, but you can no longer shuffle it.
Oh, like you could destroy whole archetypes. Like.
Well, hold on. It would have to, like, you would cost it properly, and it would just be like, this card is exiled. Like, it would be great in game ones, and then games 2 and 3 you don't really care for, but because, you know, you might not get additional games. But there are a few cards in Magic that refer to getting things from the exiled zone.
Or outside of the game.
Outside of the game. This one is a zone where if I play it, it would have to be like white, 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 remove target creature. Or put target creature into a dead zone, and it's just gone for the remainder of the match. You cannot shuffle it in, and then, you know, just like that.
But then 5 years later, they make a card that says, return target card from the dead zone to your hand.
No, it would have to be like return from the dead zone to exile.
So you have to, like, jump it through the hoops?
Yeah, it's dead zone, man. Like, that's epic. Like, you're literally saying this card is not playable for the rest of this match. It can't just go back to your hand.
Yeah,
like,
I do say that. I'd be like, you get like a Thoughtseize, you'd be like, black, black, black. This card, look at target player's hand. Take a non-land card and remove it to the, or put it into the dead zone. Something so extreme.
It's just super exile.
Yeah, that's all. I was like, that would be pretty awesome if I could just permanently take a card out of my opponent's deck so I didn't have to see it in games 2 and 3. Yeah, that'd be tight.
Yeah. I'd be okay with this.
It'd be awesome. They could definitely do it on Historic.
Oh, yeah.
Just this card's gone for the remainder of the match. Call it the jail zone. I don't care. Call it prison. I don't care.
It should just be like you don't get the card ever again. It removes it from your collection. You have to like cash in a new wild card.
Wizards would make so much money.
Oh yeah. My god.
They're gonna start
selling wild cards.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just gonna say start selling wild cards for $10 a piece. Like, all right, you want to play this card again, you gotta pay $10.
And they aggressively make like a cycle of them, one in each color, for a single mana.
Nah, they should just do it this way, where they just inconvenience you, where you lose the card from your account, but you get an exchange rate of a wild card back, so you have to do the system of looking it up, spinning a wild card,
and then putting it in the deck.
Yeah.
Oh, you get the little triangle, like, oh, this deck's not legal. You're like, dang it, I gotta go back and get this again.
And then if you don't have any more in your collection, you actually have to, like, hit the button where non-collection, so it appears.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah,
there'd be so much rage.
Arena, go ahead and do that. I'm going to play more Arena if I can just build a deck that just forces people to use your store interface.
And please add chat so people can rage. Oh my god, I want people to yell at me.
This guy exiled. I just love the thought of a guy like putting some random one-offs in his deck and then can't remembering what those cards are.
His deck list just changes.
What was that card? It's like, sorry, dude.
Dude, with Brawl coming out, oh, that'd be so great.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
I am kind of hyped for that.
Dude, that's the best. It's such a good change. All right, guys. Great cast. It's been awesome. I'm probably going to go play one round of Pokemon. Well, I'll probably do a little bit my dailies for the Pokemon Unite and call it a night. What about you guys?
Same.
Probably going to go play some DayZ because I am a glutton for punishment.
DayZ's great.
Yes. All right, that's episode 11. You can follow us on Facebook. You can always check us out on Apple and Spotify. We do have a Twitter. It's not as active as I'd like it to be, but that's where you can find us. And peace out.